we're in Koroit. We're at the Koroit Botanical Gardens on the original main street of Koroit, which is High Street. And the Koroit Botanical Gardens is at the centre of the original layout for the town of Koroit. It was designed as an area for open space, relaxation and enjoyment of the community, but also as a learning resource for the education of the community.
Now we're standing at what was or what is the main gates, which I gather have seen better days and the way they look right now.
So that we're standing in front of some construction fencing at the moment, and behind this fence is what are called the DS Koto Memorial Gates. And these were installed by the community of Koroit to commemorate a former GP that was a much respected member of the community. The current condition is symptomatic of regional botanic gardens all over Victoria. They're a fantastic resource that we have, but they're also needing to be reinvigorated and rediscovered. And we need to find a new future for our regional botanic gardens. At the moment, there are trees that are about 140 years old from an old hedge, and they're falling down onto the memorial gates. There's no signage. There's no original signage left, so we need to actually identify the gardens again as a botanical garden.
Now, this garden then, people may know, is a Guilfoyle garden, and he, of course, did lots of gardens around our area, so it does have some significance.
Yes, William Guilfoyle was brought to Koroit in 1887 by the former Minister for Public Works, William Anderson of Rosebank in Southern Cross. And the gardens, basically, not a lot of development had happened since 1857. Baron von Mueller donated 190 plants in 1870, but there was just basically an ongoing problem about trying to get a decent amount of development into the gardens. So we were lucky to have a local member that had enough influence to be able to bring down a person who is considered the greatest landscape designer in the history of Australia. He was responsible for the Melbourne Botanic Gardens and a whole host of regional botanic gardens across Victoria. He basically, when you look at the original plan, linked up a lot of the initial von Mueller plantings with serpentine paths and intricate garden beds. And if you look at the original plants, the original trees still left intact in the garden, they're basically in the same locations as that William Guilfoyle master plan.
Well, we've come into the gardens, and it's a bit of a surprise once you walk into the gardens, actually, how big the space is.
The gardens are originally part of a reservation of about 20 acres set aside for sporting grounds as well as a public garden. Initially, it became obvious that there was too much space reserved totally for gardens, so a cricket ground was developed to the west of the gardens. And by the 1950s, after the Second World War, there wasn't a lot of money for gardens maintenance, and a caravan park was developed in the corner of the gardens. And this happened all across Victoria. And basically, this was probably a really good idea at the time, but a couple of decades later, and we're really finding out that the expectations of people visiting and staying in caravan parks is different, and they generally want cabin accommodation and a better quality of accommodation now. So really, we're seeing this tradition now of caravanning being moved out of botanical gardens, and the botanical gardens being reclaimed totally as public open space. And that's something that the community of Koroit is looking at doing now and planning about how we need accommodation and we need caravans to come and spend time in Koroit, but we need a different site for it.
There's one over there which looks like it's from the 1950s as well, so maybe it arrived in that original thing. Tell us a bit about the plans for the gardens though, because they were only relatively recently rediscovered, I understand.
The master plan, Koroit's lucky to have the original master plan for the Koroit Botanical Gardens, and basically in about 2006 there was a council clean-up day, and where they'd go around and they'd chuck out all the old files and paperwork that had been lying around. And somebody found the garden's master plan, which is a huge big parchment document, down the back of a filing cabinet. And being very good quality professional staff at the time, they realised the significance of this document, that it needed to be properly conserved. And they immediately sent it straight off to the Public Records Office for conservation. And it's now down in North Melbourne, in the Public Records Office, and anyone can access it if they book through the State Archives and go down and get a copy.
So looking at this plan then, how much of what was planned actually got built, or how much of it actually exists?
Well, as you can see, it's a very detailed plan. Basically about two-thirds of the master plan were installed, we understand. So the original paths are still in place, and they haven't been top dressed in about the last 20 years. So the council at the moment are working with us to help get some new fencing and resurface the paths and reform the original garden beds. One of the interesting features of the master plan is that pretty much where the caravan park is where Guilfoyle had a design for an ornamental lake. So the intention of the master plan was that it could be developed over time and as money allowed. So we're still on target to actually install that lake, and we'll be looking at how we might do that in the future.
So when you say over time, so it was very loose, was it, as to how long it would take to develop these gardens originally?
Yes, gardens are always a work in progress. But the beauty of having this master plan is not even Melbourne Botanical Gardens has an original master plan. Guilfoyle basically used the process in the 1840s at Melbourne to come to terms with the ideas that he'd been thinking about from his time spent as a nurseryman and working in the South, looking and travelling around the South Pacific. And so we actually have an opportunity here to restore and implement the original plan. And a lot of the vegetation and the ideas were designed at a time when sustainability was just how people did their work. They didn't have the resources or technology for elaborate irrigation systems. So a lot of the species on the plan actually work really well for our climate. An interesting feature of the master plan is that there's the use of a lot of native and also indigenous local vegetation, which is quite unusual for botanical gardens. So we have trees that are local to the Tower Hill. We have eucalyptus trees in the original design, and a lot of rainforest trees from southeastern Australia that are really well suited to our dry climate, surprisingly.
Now, where are things up to then with the plan to go back to the master plan and see, well, I guess, how much more of it you can do? Because I imagine this is not a small undertaking. This is a big task.
It's actually quite easy, and we're really lucky that we've got a very vibrant and energetic community in Koroit, and we've got a very supportive team at the local council at Moyne Shire, and we're partnering with them at the moment. The Shire's very competent and able to do things such as the engineering works and the physical works, such as paths and fences and signage and seating. What is more specialist and takes more labour and time are things like putting in the original garden beds, sourcing out rare and unusual plant material. And that's how we can partner with council, with community members and with professionals across the country that are interested in the Koroit Botanical Gardens and regional botanical gardens generally, to try and find a new future for this open space. And open space is really important for regional communities. Koroit is one of the few towns around the southwest that's actually growing and is going to about double in size over the next 25 years. So as other towns are looking for a future and wondering where they're going to get the population from, we're really riding on the coattails of the success of the southwest generally, with Warrnambool, with Port Fairy, and we're going to need more open space. With that doubling in population, we're pretty much going to need a doubling in open space, and we're going to need to get better quality and better use out of the existing network that we have to make it affordable.
So a lot of work to be done then, maybe. I mean, as the garden stands today, though, are there any any real highlights, I guess, or any special things about the gardens today which people might not know about?
Well, one of the things you have to have with a botanical garden that's found to attract visitors is to have some really important trees. And we're standing in front of some of the original 140-year-old trees now, and some of them starting to look a bit past it. But there's a very large brachycotton, Illawarra flame tree, and there'd be few places in Victoria where you would find a collection of trees of this age, of this significance, in such a small area. The Dracaena draco, which is a Canary Islands native tree called the dragon tree. The Shire's done a bit of work a few years ago getting the grass from the lawn away from the root zone of the trees. And that's one of the important things that's really easy to do with big old trees, is to stop the mowers damaging the root system. So the Shire and community members over the last month or so have been busily mulching the root zones of these big old trees. And this will basically allow them to continue on and grow for a few more decades yet.
There's another one here as well, which is obviously held together by a wire up the top, so it was in danger of collapsing, was it?
Yeah, so one of the ideas that some arborists have is as trees get very long, get very tall, and the branches extend, they carry a heck of a lot of weight. And some thinking that's quite controversial now is that it's possible to cable those branches together. There's different schools of thought. Some people think it's appropriate. Others think that there's other ways to manage trees other than cabling. So it's a controversial area.
So for people who are interested then in being a part of all this, I mean, you need everybody, I imagine, but how do people get involved?
Well, there are two sort of components to it. There's the need for a network of people with technical skills and that can have professional input, whether it's through horticulture, science, engineering, local historians, academics, and then there's also the sort of social component and the importance of using this space for community connectedness, so where people can come along and we can have events in the gardens, we can have performances, jazz in the gardens over summer. We've got a very successful lake school, traditional Irish music school, and we use this as a performance space at the moment. So the friends will play a really important role in helping us build up momentum for resourcing, but also coming up with ideas for how we can use this as public open space. So there's that, the professional component, and there's the community social component of the friends group.